It's 3 a.m. on Monday, the 10th of September, 1949. In the North London home of Michael Perrin, director of Britain's atomic energy programme, the telephone rings. Perrin is startled from his dreams. Still half asleep, he rolls out of bed and grabs the phone. A voice on the line delivers an urgent message.
Mr. Perrin, we need you to come to the American Embassy now.
The Americans, what could they want? His mind races. He finds no answers, but he knows it must be serious. He rushes to get dressed and hurries out of the door into the dark night.
He jumped in a taxi, made the 15-minute ride down to the middle of London, went to the embassy where he was hustled into the secure communications room there by the U.S. State Department officials. There were several coded telex messages that had come that evening from the Pentagon that said the U.S. Air Force, using specially equipped planes, had detected radiation.
British and American scientists have assured their governments that Russia is 3 or more years away from getting the bomb. But this news completely reshapes the post-war landscape. A Russian bomb challenges American global supremacy. And for the Brits, it could mean... From the BBC World Service, I'm Rosa Ellis, and this is Season 2 of The Bomb. Episode 1, A Grave Matter. In this quiet graveyard on the outskirts of Berlin, there's a headstone. It's small, made of pinkish granite. It's engraved with block capital letters, but no epitaph, just a simple name and date. There's no hint at the historical significance of the man buried here. Klaus Fuchs. In life, Fuchs was an outstanding mathematician and theoretical physicist. When he died, standing at his funeral here in 1988, there was a KGB agent. His name? Vladimir Putin. So why would the future president of Russia come to pay his respects on behalf of the motherland to a physicist? Well, Klaus Fuchs was much more than just a talented scientist. He was instrumental in the development of the American and British nuclear bomb programs. He was also a spy. He changed the course of history and the balance of world power. And Putin was grateful. Back in the US Embassy, in September 1949, Michael Perrin stands bleary-eyed. His head is spinning. The Americans want him to equip British RAF planes with radiation monitoring equipment so that he can confirm their findings. There is no room for error. Communist Russia and the capitalist West are engaged in a global power struggle. The Cold War is threatening to turn decidedly hot. But Perrin has a problem. He knows the man he needs to call. He also knows there is no way he can call him. Nancy Thorndike Greenspan is author of the biography Atomic Spy, The Dark Lives of Klaus Fuchs.
Only 4 days previously, on September 6th of 1949, Michael Perrin had had other bad news.
Britain's intelligence agency, MI5, have recently received a telegram from the British Embassy in Washington. Note the classic British understatement.
We have discovered material which, though fragmentary, appears to indicate that in 1944, a British or British-sponsored scientist working here on atomic energy or related subjects was providing Russia with policy information or documents. My present opinion is this will prove a grave matter.
Grave matter is putting it lightly. The intelligence comes from a top-secret American code-breaking mission in Arlington, Virginia, and MI5 put one of their sharpest minds on the job. Arthur Martin is a professional lawyer with a fastidious attention to detail. He chain-smokes cigarettes and pours stiff whiskies from the bottle in his desk drawer. He works day and night to join the dots, sifting through fragments of broken, incoherent messages the Americans have intercepted from the Russians 5 years previously. Some of the code words are obvious. Country is the United States. Islanders are the British. But there is an agent mentioned, an agent they call Rest. Agent Rest is the mystery. It is a puzzle with most of the pieces missing, but Martin painstakingly starts to form a picture. Nigel West is an author on British intelligence history.
It turned out eventually that Rest could only have been one particular person who had been given a furlough, had been given permission to leave the premises over Christmas 1944 and to visit his sister in Boston.
Martin consults his boss in MI5 and they decide they need the help of somebody who knows the British nuclear programme inside out. Perrin is their man. A small team of the agency's top brass go to meet him at his office overlooking the Thames with some deeply disturbing news.
That there was a British spy in the American-British atomic bomb project. This spy had been providing top-secret information to the Russians throughout.
And Martin has a name, Klaus Fuchs, one of Britain's most respected and accomplished nuclear scientists. How could it all have gone so disastrously wrong? Answers can be found in the most unlikely of places. Dial back to July 1942. War rages on the continent and Nazi Germany has just invaded Russia. Meanwhile, in the summer heat of rural Oxfordshire, a steam train pulls up at Banbury Railway Station. It's a typically quiet Sunday afternoon and the station cat stretches in the sun. A young man with a quiet, studious air steps onto the platform. He's wearing glasses, dressed in a casual suit and carrying an attaché case. He strolls out into the country lanes. He looks calm, but a thin film of sweat on his forehead betrays a nervousness. At the same time, 3 miles away, an energetic 33-year-old woman is leaving her idyllic farmhouse home on a bicycle. Her blouse sleeves are dusted with flour from the scones she has baking in the oven. Her children are being looked after by the housekeeper. She stands on the pedals and flies through the lanes, heading towards the man. 2 illicit lovers on the way to a tryst, perhaps? A romantic reunion? In fact, there is no love here. It's much more serious than that.
So the relationship between the case officer and the agent is of enormous importance because each holds the other's life in their hands. The rendezvous as they walk through country lanes in Oxfordshire together were of critical importance to each other. First of all, him reassuring her that he is of value and is supplying important information, and she's putting her life at risk for a good purpose. And secondly, she is reassuring him about her professionalism.
What this pair are about to do is all about political and military power. It will have consequences for the history of the modern world and will affect the lives of hundreds of millions of people. The woman is Ursula Kaczynski. She's a mother, a housewife, and an undercover Soviet intelligence officer. And if you're wondering why I'm telling this story, it's because Ursula is also my great aunt. The man is her prized asset, Klaus Fuchs. He's an atomic physicist working on the most secret project of the Second World War, the development of an atomic bomb. His story reads like a spy novel. From Nazi Germany to wartime Britain, from the Manhattan Project's atomic bomb development in the US, to the UK's secret post-war nuclear research centre at Harwell, Fuchs had a direct line to the Soviet leader, Joseph Stalin. His actions shaped the world as we know it. In 1951, he was described by the US Congress as a man who influenced the safety of more people and accomplished greater damage than any other spy, not only in the history of the United States, but in the history of nations. He's often referred to as the world's most dangerous spy. But was he? There are infinite turning points through history. Moments and relationships that shape the world we live in. Did Klaus Fuchs and my great aunt create a more dangerous world? Did they help bring about a frightening nuclear standoff that threatens us to this day? In history, there's always another point of view.
Greetings, comrade.
Alexander Vasilyev is an author and former KGB agent who studied the KGB files on Klaus Fuchs.
The fact that the Soviets created their own atom bomb so soon, it actually probably saved Europe from a Third World War, because it reestablished the strategic balance between the Americans and the Soviets, and it prevented the Americans from bombing the Soviet Union, which, in my opinion, was quite possible if the Soviets didn't have the bomb.
Do you think so?
Yeah, I do. I actually do. I believe that it would have been very easy for them to bomb the Soviets, for instance, Moscow, if the Soviets didn't have a chance to retaliate.
Wow. So from one perspective, Ursula and Fuchs saved a lot of lives.
Actually, tank divisions, infantry divisions in Europe, so it would be a total bloodshed. So that's why I believe that people like Klaus Fuchs, like Ursula Kuczynski, they actually saved the world from the Third World War.
Quantum physics teaches us that it's possible for some things to be in two places at once, to be two things at once. A particle can be a wave. A cat can be simultaneously alive and dead. But what about people? Can a person be a devoted friend, a beloved houseguest, a trusted companion, a prized colleague, and at the same time be a traitor, a double dealer, a liar, a zealot? Can the two things coexist and both be true? Klaus Fuchs understood the contradictions and paradoxes of the quantum world, a world he mirrored.
I used my Marxist philosophy to establish in my mind two separate compartments. One compartment in which I allowed myself to make friendships, to have personal relations, to help people, and to be in all personal ways the kind of man I wanted to be. I could be free and easy and happy with other people without fear of disclosing myself, because I knew that the other compartment would step in.
Wittingly ensnared in his life of lies. My investigations into this story will involve speaking with people all over the world, from the west coast of America to Berlin, people whose lives and families were directly impacted by Fuchs's espionage. The nephew who was raised by Klaus Fuchs's father.
The problem is with his loyalty to his friends. He didn't want to say the untruth to his friends.
The daughter from the family who took him in as a second son.
I think they were hurt, and I don't think that ever went away. He knew how much he had hurt and upset my parents.
And the niece who was trailed by FBI agents on her way to school.
The unintended consequences do not negate what the person did. Similarly, what the person did does not negate the consequences.
This story unfolds in a time of great turmoil. Societies are upended and global power redefined as countries, empires, and ideologies battle for supremacy. Politics and war provide the context, but I want to understand the human story here, to get into Klaus Fuchs's mind and uncover the enigma behind his actions. How was he so successful in deceiving the people closest to him? And did he ever feel any remorse? By doing this, I hope to understand my own family's part in the story. My great-aunt Ursula is considered one of the Soviet Union's greatest spies. Her life has many similarities to Klaus's. They were both born in Germany amidst the rise of fascism, and experienced violence at a young age. They both committed to communism, and they both repeatedly put their lives in extraordinary danger. I hope that by understanding Klaus Fuchs, I'll understand a bit more about my great-aunt Ursula, the Cotswolds' own secret agent. On a sunny afternoon, Klaus Fuchs passes through a remote wood in the English countryside. A few steps ahead, my great-auntie leads the way. She stops, checks no one else is around, takes out a small trowel and starts to dig a hole in the undergrowth between the roots of a tree.
And she was down there digging away. And Fuchs was standing there looking at her, just observing.
Mike Rossiter is author of The Spy Who Changed the World.
And she looked up at him. And she didn't feel that maybe he should be helping or doing something. She just looked up at him and thought that this was quite normal because she was practical. She was the person who could do this. And all she could look at was this rather dear, warm, affectionate professor who she had an enormous amount of respect for, which was clearly far more than she would have felt for an ordinary agent or an ordinary contact. They were two lonely people in a foreign country. They couldn't talk about their past. They couldn't talk about what they really believed in and what they thought. They couldn't discuss with anybody else around them what really motivated them or what they cared about. Now suddenly here, these two German communist exiles could walk unobserved through an English countryside and actually talk about the things that really interested them and about who they really were.
The hole Ursula dug was for their dead letterbox. It was here that they placed messages to arrange future meetings. I wonder how they marked the spot. Did they count how many trees there were from the path, or mark the route in some way? When she was done, they continued their walk through the lanes and then parted. He headed for Banbury train station and his work in the heart of the UK's atomic bomb programme. And my great-aunt, Ursula Kaczynski, the Red Army's Agent Sonia, cycled back to her farmhouse and her hidden radio transmitter with a direct line to Soviet intelligence. But how did these two unassuming German exiles come to be at the centre of one of the most audacious and important espionage missions?
Information that he had.
Klaus Fuchs was the perfect spy. On the one hand, he was a communist. On the other hand, he was a very private person. He didn't talk much.
On BBC Sounds or wherever you get your podcasts, we'd love it if you'd leave a rating or a review to help other people find it. The Bomb was presented by me, Rosa Ellis. It was written and produced by Zach Brophy. The story editor was Emma Harding. Alice McKee was the assistant producer. Our producer in Berlin was Sabina Scherek. Klaus Fuchs was played by Marcus Calvin. And Klaus Kitowski by Wolf Kahler. Eugenia Piles was Madlena Nadeva, with additional performances by David Hounslow. Sound design was by Tim Nielsen at Skywalker Sound. Our music was composed by Trevor Gorekis. Additional music by Ben Marshall. The episode was mixed by Eloise Whitmore. The executive producer was Glyn Tansley. And the podcast was commissioned by Simon Pitts at the BBC World Service.